Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Here it is worth noting the distinction between karma and bhakti, between material piety and spiritual surrender. The opulence of the citizenry is not itself evidence of having received the Lord's mercy. In fact, according to Queen Kunti, this piety could even serve as a hindrance to gaining the Lord's mercy. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.27. So she used the word materially exhausted. That doesn't mean that you don't have anything material. It means that you're not interested in anything material. That's the real point there. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse. The result is that possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly. O Govinda, O Krishna, it is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Right? Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement, right? Because one has to be careful not to try to qualify the statement. Well, yes, that's a pure chanting, or this is that. Pure chanting will get you prema. Just chanting will get rid of sins. Right? It means, like we say, the guy on the street, he's there, sees the devotees going by, and kirtan, turns to his friend, yeah, Hare Krishna, you know, say, so just joking, or like this. He's being freed from sin. Right? Because why do we take that as important? Because we value liberation. So liberation means being completely free from material sin. So therefore, we will put it into a special category. When actually liberation is not that important. Okay. Okay, so that's why it says there's not the least exaggeration. That's why then there's the offense. Don't, you know, do not take it as exaggeration. Because it's meaning like that. Because we're used to that you perform good work, you're a pious person, then only you can get good. But then here you have this element where someone's not good, and they're still getting benefit. Right? That's the nature of the Lord's holy name. That's the nature of the Lord. Yes.
But being liberated has value in that it is a better platform for performing good work.
Yes. But that means technically all devotees are liberated, but they don't really, you know, they don't appreciate it, so they don't act on that platform.
It's like the jail cell that's not locked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency, but there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Because we're interested in quality chanting. Because we're not recommending that we go stand around on corners and make jokes about devotees walking by, you know. As long as we're chanting the holy name. So they're being benefited. But the point is in quality, then that's where you're going to attract Krishna's attention. Because becoming freed from sin, that's not what attracts Krishna's attention. So being very renounced, being very pure, that's not what attracts. What attracts is devotion. So it's the quality that one is of the utterance, as Prabhupada said. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely, 1, high parentage, 2, good wealth, 3, high education, and 4, attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. Because most will get puffed up by these. But we always see that these very highly qualified people may have all these, and they behave very nicely. That's because they're actually qualified on the spiritual platform. So it's by the purity of that they're nice. Because otherwise, generally we hear about nice in storybooks. You know what I'm saying? Was it? I think it was Sleeping Beauty, I think. You know, so qualified that she united all the kingdoms and everything like that. And, you know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But how many Sleeping Beauties are there? Right? Disney's got one. Right? You know, so that's the whole thing, is how many are there of all kings in Europe? You know, what king is like that? Arthur.
Yeah.
But they're not even sure if he actually existed.
No.
Right? Okay. Any Romans like that? No. Any Greeks? No? He's just there. You know, so that's the whole thing, is by devote. So it's an ideal. But the whole thing is that it's about it's devotion is what actually generates these things. So there has to be some devotion there. So to actually have it what's sustainable, that you can maintain the qualities and have that, it's only by devotional service. So material, you can't do it. As soon as you have the one, then the material qualities, you know, come up and one gets distracted. Yeah. The material coverings of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. This is no discouragement, right? Because sometimes we'll think, no, I'm doing religion, I should get facility. But it seems sometimes it's not. So it's not a problem, because when you get rid of these other things, then, you know, it works. Yeah. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign, as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. Right? You know, it's not about dropping temperatures, it's about being healthy. So to do that, you have to get rid of the fever. Right? So it's not that whether you have material possessions or not, it's about giving up material attachments. So by losing possessions, it becomes a little bit easier. Right? The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit for entrance into the kingdom of God. Teachings of Queen Kuti, chapter 9. So, if one can use the facility in Krishna's service without becoming proud, nice. But if one can't, then better one avoids it. Or reduces it down to the point one can function with it. Does that make sense? Because as we see, Yudhishthira is emperor of the world. So it's not a problem to have here's high parentage. You don't get any higher, at least amongst the Kshatriyas and the Kurus, like that. Good wealth, definitely, emperor of the world. There's a few, you know, a few pretty pennies there. Right? High education, right? They had, you know, the best teachers and everything. They're the, And that is also, you see, by their behavior and attractive beauty, right? They were the most attractive. They were like demigods. But they were able to engage all that in the Lord's service. But you see that sometimes there, that they would have nothing. And still their devotional service would go on. So that's the thing. Well, some is when they have things, then they're enthusiastic. And then when they lose, then they lose their enthusiasm. So that's not good. That's not good. Right? Because otherwise that means is that one's inspired by the religious principle rather than the devotional principle. Does that make sense? So it can be an impediment. If it's not, if one has all this and one is doing service nicely, then one can say, now that's the Lord's mercy on that side. As Balaraj points out, is that, or Vamanadeva points out, is that you have that facility. And then, are they speaking Russian? Is that a Russian thing? If you do something wrong, you whack yourself in the head? Huh? every culture kind of has their, you know. Because different people do it differently. Some do like that, you know, and then some go, you know, like this. You know, there are different methods of, yeah, whether it's the front, whether it's the side. Yeah, yes, they get symptoms of the different cultural nuances. Huh? Okay, so now we're seeing here. Narad Muni praises the king by observing that his citizenry, rather than by being distracted by their material opulence, is instead using it in the service of the Lord, just like the king himself. So now, that means how pious is the king, how devotional is the king, that all his citizenry are doing the same. They have such opulence, and they're all using it in the Lord's service. Right? So that then he's seeing that's a sign of material advancement, that they have the mercy of the Lord, right? Because the mercy of the Lord is you lose everything and you become more devotional. Or here is that devotional is stable, so even if they have wealth, their devotion continues like that. So then that's taken in that way. So then that's quite good, right? Yes.
In this definition, piety is close to devotion.
Sorry?
Piety
is useful in engaging in devotion, but it's not that piety is devotion, because it's just like saying good quality ingredients then will aid in cooking and in the quality of the preparation, but not in the quality of the devotion. But it may be good ingredients are a symptom of devotion because one has made the attempt to get these nice ingredients, right? But it may be just you like eating good food, therefore you've gotten good ingredients. But, you know, you're cooking, so you'll offer it to the Lord. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing about this, is you have to explain what's going on at the same time, not create a problem for other aspects. Because wealth means these four qualities, high parentage, wealth, education, and attractive beauty. These aren't the problem. They can be nicely engaged in the Lord's service, but the tendency is that people get puffed up by them and get distracted. So if you don't have these, then that's considered useful. But at the same time, if you have them and you're engaging them in the Lord, that's also useful. But the point is devotion is there. So whatever increases devotion, so having or not having, whichever one will increase the devotion, that's what you want. Right? So it's not that wealth is good for devotional service or wealth is bad, or piety is good or piety is bad. It's just a matter of whatever, how do you say, is useful. Like let's say you may have smartas, and they have, you know, good high parentage, high education, much of the time very attractive, may or may not have good wealth, you know, but, you know, much of the time they're doing okay, you know, because they're careful about their money and because they're conservatives, they don't spend it on things, so they generally do okay. So then, but they can become very proud of that. That's the difficulty. Then they're not going to seriously or sincerely chant the holy name. Not that they don't chant, but whether they'll be very sincere in that, because they already feel that what it is that they're looking for, they've already gained. Right? The purpose of religion has already been gained, so it's not necessarily that pure devotion is what they're looking for, so they may not sincerely chant. They may do chanting as part of their sadhana, but it won't be necessarily as sincere as it should be. While as someone who loses everything has a tendency to be sincere. Right? Now, whether that sincerity will continue once their situation is corrected, right? Because the artarti, you know, jigyasu may, upon attaining what they're looking for, then again fade back into material endeavor. But they also might not. They might, by that sincere chanting and association, see that this is much more important, so therefore they just continue, even though things are going well for them. So, 62. Sri Parikit said, Narada, the best of Vaishnavas, singing along with his veena, thus expansively described the king, praising his greatness, and Narada embraced him again and again. The king refutes Narada's praise. 63-65. The king, that ruler of a vast region, then worshipped the topmost sage and humbly replied, his head bowed down in embarrassment by the weight of hearing his own praise. The king said, O sage, among the demigods, I am a human being with a short life span, little opulence and little to give others. I have no independence. I am constantly attacked by fear and ruled by the threefold miseries of material life. I would not even deserve Krishna's word in that the future he might show me his mercy. Why do you wrongly consider me an object of his compassion? So we're looking at what's here, but now he's saying is that if you're looking at this facility and all that, is what does he have compared to the demigods? Right? And life, we're just here a short time. The demigods are there for a long time. Right? So therefore, and you know, I'm always, you know, I'm independent. I have to function in this kingly duties. Always there's the element of the modes of nature. You're worried about the other kingdoms. You're worried about this and that. You know, he's just looking at what he goes through in his, in other words, all the elements that he would consider are not very developed in his own personality. But we can see by the example of what Narada Muni is observing is that he's very developed. Right? But he's going to point out what's weak in his devotional and then point to others where that weakness is not present. Right? Because you'll notice is that they will take their strengths and avoid discussing those, and they will take what they see as their own weaknesses and then point that and then point how someone else is better.
So it could even, I mean, now we are taking it actual as progressing towards higher and higher levels of devotion, but it could even go the other way because they would still find something in the other that would be...
Yeah, well the thing is what's there is because generally persons consider having these four elements that this is a good result of piety, right? And so people are looking at that. So it's not that having these is a problem in devotional service. And it might be if someone's situated nicely, they even have, these are symptoms of their devotional piety that they have. Because if you have devotional piety, then naturally there's material piety. Right? So it can be a symptom of that. But the thing is you're discerning between these elements. Just like when that Lord Chaitanya is discussing with Ramananda Rai, then so many things that are naturally part of the support of devotional service, he's rejecting. Not that they're not done, but he's rejecting that's the essential point. That's not the primary, that's the secondary. So having wealth, the symptoms, just like you said, healthy and unhealthy body. So unhealthy body is a state. Now the symptom is fever. So that attachment or distraction by this material, these particular things of wealth, position, and all that, these are symptoms of actual, you know, material attachment. Right? So then the whole idea is how to develop the actual main devotional element is that surrender to the Lord, that dependence on the Lord, that expression of the love for the Lord, right? That sincerity of devotion. That's what one's looking for. Then, so therefore in that, these secondary symptoms may or may not be there. Right? Just like in the 26 qualities of a devotee, that surrender to the Lord is the one quality that's always there. That's the Sarup Lakshana. Right? All the other 25 are ones that may be there or not there, depending on the time, place, and circumstance.
But everybody would agree that they're all good.
Yeah, they're all good. But which one is manifest where, you don't know. You know, is that? So we're trying to get this difference here. So then, therefore, you can move up and say that they are more developed. Right? Because otherwise, why would one get the position of a demigod unless one had that particular piety and devotion? Right? But at the same time, you see that there's weaknesses in that also. Right? Because everything, when you're dealing in the material world, everything has something that's good at the same time as then it also has the element of distraction. Does that make sense?
So when we see someone like Indra, he gets distracted.
Yes, that's why there's going to be someone after Indra.
Yes. So he would actually probably do better here in like a janitor job or something, because there would be less distractions, or would that be...
Not necessarily, because then, you know, would you put everybody as a janitor? How many janitors do you need? I mean, yes, the planet would be extremely clean,
yeah.
You know, but at the same time, there's a limit to how many janitors you need.
That's...
If you like that.
But his material situation...
No, it doesn't have to. That's what we're saying. With Yudhishthira, it doesn't. With Bali Maharaj, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Bali Maharaj has more than Indra. You know, Sudama Brahman has more than Indra.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem.
Indra just seems quite confused at times.
That's there, but because he has a certain amount of piety, but it's up to a particular point. So in other words, he's the most pious of that mentality. Of everybody who is a fruitive worker,
yes.
He is the most pious. Right?
Yeah.
Or you could say karma yoga. He's the most pious.
Yeah.
But when you start getting to jnana yoga, then there's a whole...
Yeah.
Then the whole satya loka, the, you know, as a planetary system, is above that. Okay, firstly, the king addresses Narada as Devarshi, sage among demigods, to establish his lowly position. Except for Narada, who among the demigods even care to visit this forsaken earthly realm. Right? Because the demigods aren't coming down. Right? The king's opinion of himself is that he is a slave to Maya, his material conditioning, and the tyranny of ritual dress, duties. Essentially, he's saying, if I'm so dear to the Lord, then what am I still doing here in Martya Loka? Footnote 14. The Bhagavad Gita states, when they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal plane again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. Bhagavad Gita 9:21. Right? You've gone there because of piety, but then when that's reduced, then you'll come back here. So that's his point, is that I can't be that pious, because otherwise why am I here? I would be there. You know, yeah, you see the logic. Sorry? On the way. Yeah, I guess everybody here is eventually on the way there. You know, going to samsara. Eventually you'll get up. You know, it's like you have Brahma at this end and the Indragopa at that end, you know. You go down until you get there, and then you go back up. Yeah, Brahma at one end and the Ebola virus on the other. Right? You know, so. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. One who is promoted to the higher planetary systems enjoys a longer duration of life and better facilities for sense enjoyment. Yet one is not allowed to stay there forever. One is again sent back to this earth upon finishing the resultant fruits of pious activities. He who has not attained perfect knowledge, as indicated in the Vedanta Sutra, janmadyasya yataha, or in other words, he who fails to understand Krishna, the cause of all causes, becomes baffled about achieving the ultimate goal of life, and is thus subjected to the routine of being promoted to the higher planets and then again coming down, as if situated on a Ferris wheel, which sometimes goes up and sometimes goes down. Bhagavad Gita 9:21 purport. Very expensive Ferris yes. wheel. Right, because he's going to take whatever is going to be, you know, in his humility that he's not the devotee and how somebody else is. Like that. The king directs Narada to the demigods. The demigods are the real objects of the Supreme Lord Vishnu's mercy. They have effulgent bodies and are always worshipable by men. They are sinless, fixed in goodness, free from distress, and always happy. They act and travel however they like. They give their blessings by granting what their devotees desire. Footnote 15. These correspond to Kleshagni and Subhadra, the first two characteristics of sadhana bhakti mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Kleshagni is the destruction of miseries constituted of ignorance, seed of sin, desire for sinful action and reaction, and ignorance, seed of punya. No. Of ignorance, it shouldn't be ignorance. Oh, I see. On the destruction of ignorance. So the seed of punya. Desire to do punya and the actions of punya. Subhadra is the bestowal of all good qualities and pure happiness of the jiva, as well as manifesting the affection from all living entities to all living entities. Right? So these are symptoms. That's the whole thing, is that these symptoms can go either way, just like if someone has no money, it's generally a symptom of impiety, right? But we see in performing devotional service, there may be the symptom of having no money because Krishna took it away so that they will surrender, right? And at the same time, as we see, is someone having material facility, that can be a symptom of their materialism and their attachment to it and lack of technically good qualities, though they had to have had something to get there. But they become proud and then they start down. So in other words, they're just at the top before they head down. At the same time, it'd be symptomatic of the devotee that by performing the devotional service, then all these material, problems and all that, anxieties go away, right? And having all the good qualities, right? So then here, he's looking at it that they're the ones that have the results of devotional service, right? Because they have, you know, great, lack of miseries and great, you know, good qualities and happiness, because they're in the mode of goodness. Right? So as we can see is coming up, is that they'll say is, what do you mean? We're not happy. Those guys above us are happy, and you know, and what you understand. So it's just a matter of, you know, if you're using, he's going through different aspects of the devotional service. In other words, that someone is performing has these nice qualities, and you know, is able to, I say, the Brahman. So he is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, practicing himself, but you see his influence is not so much. Though he does have, he's, you could say in, I think it was in Varanasi, that he's the most prominent. But he'll say, on this aspect, then you have to look at this king, the southern king. Now the southern king, now he has these aspects of that you could say are within symptoms of devotional service, in that he is practicing, he's getting others to practice, and from this then all these nice facilities are being engaged in the Lord's service. So there's a symptomatic of being from devotional service. But at the same time, as they can also be not indicative of that. You understand? Just like the Brahmin in Varanasi, his being the leader of so many other Brahmins could be a distraction and a disqualification. Right? So in other words, all these things they could be both ways. They can be both ways. But then the idea is that you get is we'll just keep going until that stops. Then it will just be deeper depth in devotional service. Right? Because within the material, then it's having that proper devotion and all of that, having, you know, engaging everything in the Lord's service. So that's the principle. Right? So whether you have a lot or not, then that's another thing. Right? You have that sincerity, you have that devotion, then that's important. Now whether from that you generate facilities or lose facilities, that's another thing.
Just right? Makes it cause and effect.
Means you have cause and effect, but the cause and effect in bhakti is not karma. So that's why it's different. Because if it's karma, we can say you do this pious activity, you get this result. You do this sinful activity, you get this result. So remember, in Manu, it gets very specific. You do this, you become that. You steal grains, you become a rat. You know, like that. It's very, very fixed. But you know that someone, by on the material platform, you can tell their piety and that by what position they're in. You're looking at the materialist, you want to look for the person who has good birth, wealth, good education, like this. Right? You know, that physical beauty, like that. But for devotees, these things don't work that way, because they can be used in Krishna's service, but it doesn't necessarily mean we are able to engage them. Right? Therefore, then we may have them or not. And it's not that engaging them, that is a high level of devotional service. High level of devotional service is dependent upon the attitude of devotion. So devotional service is not controlled by karma, so it's not dependent on that we have these things. Right? If you're going to say someone developing in piety, material piety, then they must have these things. They don't have these things, it's a symptom of sin. Right? But in devotion, they're not. They can be symptoms, but not necessarily. Right? So therefore, we're learning this point here. Does that make sense?
It seems that someone like old money, right? They've grown up with it. They become a devotee. They might not lose anything because they're not so much identified.
No, because they have a tendency, because it's their culture, to not be... I mean, there may be you have to see, some of them have an air about them, some of them don't. But generally, yes, you do.
It's tempting then to say that bhakti then is dependent on the karma.
No, it's not. It's that individual, because of all the rich people. I mean, how many are known, how many wealthy people are known for being, you know, just simple and kind?
You know one.
Okay, you know one. Yeah, well, there's a few more from that. But I'm saying, but as devotees, you know, you do have more.
No, I know two. Yeah, that's all. But I know.
Okay. Yeah, I know a third one.
Okay.
In D.C., you know that one? No. Okay. So that, you know, they're very cultured. But it's, so they can be, that's just, they're pious. You get that kind of wealth from devotional service. So these may be persons who performed devotional service, went to the heavenly planets, and then took birth in these families, and then now are continuing their devotional service.
Yes.
Right? So they'll be different than those who have taken birth simply because of performance of the material pious activity.
Yes.
So then again, it would go back to, it's not dependent.
Yes.
Because the one who has these good qualities is actually someone who had performed devotional service before. At least with sincerity. Well, the others who have, they've all done devotional service, but there may not be, there's either the distraction by the facility, and so they don't take it seriously, or they, otherwise, then they don't have the, they perform the devotional activity, they got the results, but once they get the results, then the devotion is not important. It was just a way to get the piety. I haven't figured out this is another road. Yeah, at some point. Does this make sense? So that's the way all these things have to be looked at from all these angles. That's why you can say, is by these symptoms, you can say they're great devotees. But at the same time, by the same symptoms, they don't necessarily have to be. But at the same time, is in this, they're taking, I'm giving in charity, I'm doing this, I'm influencing people. I'm not doing that much. Look at the king. The king said, what am I doing? Look at the demigods. Right, so that same theme is developing more and more. So you can see is that there is that connection to the Lord.
Yes.
That's why it's there. So there has to be the understanding is that devotional service being independent is not dependent upon these things. But the devotional service, it produces itself. Just like the mud in the Ganges is produced by the Ganga. It's not produced from going down the river and everything like that. It's produced by the Ganga itself. Because even if she's moving really slow, she's never clear. Like going through Varanasi, she's moving very slow. No waves. Not, still, there has that. Do you understand?
New variation.
Yes. Well, they just run around the corner and they figure out, I mean, they only figured out, I think yesterday that, you know, we're the local Maharaj here. Before that, we were just some guy that they just looked at and kept on rocking.
Like that, the leader in here.
Yeah. So it's only yesterday they kind of figured out, Maharaj.
So their mood of service, and then the opulence or the facility kind of.
Yes, it may be there, may not be there, depending upon what the Lord thinks will be best for the situation. Either for that individual, for other individuals.
The leela in general.
Yeah, so the point is you can have or not have. It doesn't bother the pure devotee like that. So then what will work, then that's what happens. So it's not a problem. But at the same time, as he's pointing out here, now he's bringing in this kleshagni, is that he's happy. Right? So he's pointing out, now this, is they're happy and without this misery. Right? So the miseries are gone and they have all good qualities and happiness. And these are the first two symptoms of devotional service. There's a good chance the demigods are going to say, that's just due to piety. You know what I'm saying? It's not a symptom of devotion. Okay. 68. Their food is the nectar of immortality, which does away with such miseries as death, disease, and old age. Though not forced by hunger or thirst, the demigods enjoy great satisfaction of partaking of this nectar by their own sweet will. But it's not that they're just hungry, they have to eat. So eating this, it's just they you know, it's nice. Yeah, it works out, right? O godly Narada, on the strength of their good fortune, they live in the realm of heaven, which humans on earth can attain only by perfect, pious work. The southern king accepts his utter dependence and subordination to the demigods. Indra, Surya, Varuna, Agni, Vayu, Chandra, etc. Any goods he is able to bestow upon his citizenry is made possible only by their will. And while the king may oversee one tract of land on one tiny planet, these demigods administer to the entire universe. Therefore, mimicking the sentiments of the Brahmana before him, the king considers his accomplishments of too insignificant a scale to warrant the Lord's mercy and attention. Both the king and the Brahmana lamented their insignificance. They each expressed the idea obliquely that when it comes to service, bigger is better. While these statements may stem from their genuine humility, is there any philosophical validity to them? The Bhagavad Gita answers conclusively, "One offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it." Bhagavad Gita 2.9.26, Srila Prabhupada elaborates, "The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted even by the poorest of the poor, without any kind of qualification. The only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee of the Lord. It does not matter that one is, what one is or where one is situated. The process is so easy that even a leaf or a little water or fruit can be offered to the Supreme Lord in genuine love. And the Lord will be pleased to accept it. Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. He is not in need of anything from anyone, because he is self-sufficient. And yet he accepts the offering of his devotees in exchange of love and affection. No other condition, such as becoming a brahmana, a learned scholar, a very rich man, or a great philosopher, can induce Krishna to accept some offering. Without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. The process is eternal. It is a direct action and service to the absolute whole. Bhagavad Gita 9.26 purport. Right. So the Klesh Agni and the Shubhada, that will be in connection with the situation of the devotee when they start up devotional service, because therefore whatever their position is, they will advance, they will become more, have less material difficulty and be more situated in that devotional mood, right? Being happier and everything. So then it will be compared to the individual. But in here, then these devotees are comparing it to other devotees. That my position, that's not much you compared to the others. Now they have so much more, right? So therefore... The king also expresses his admiration for the demigods' quality of life, a function of their superior punya. Compared to him, the denizens of heaven appear immortal and independent, a belief shared by many earthly mortals. To the king's credit, however, he does recognize, in contrast with the mass of demigod worshippers, that the demigods are mere deputized servants of the Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam, in fact, goes to great lengths to refute such popular misconceptions. Numerous pastimes of Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, for example, demonstrate how they are not necessarily as sinless, fixed in goodness, or free from distress and always happy as man supposes. Narad Muni, however, does not attempt to refute any of these misconceptions here. He will address the validity of these claims by hearing from the demigods directly. So, I said, one also understands by the situation, the value means you have a whole army over there yelling and screaming, but it doesn't bother you because it's in a grass hut. But all you need is two or three in this building, and you can't tolerate it. That's why these buildings aren't meant for kids. This is a library. But until there's more facility, then they use it. Yeah. The king points out Indra as the best demigod. My dear sage, the most distinguished of these demigods is Purandara Indra. He has full power to reward and punish, and he gives the world life by providing rain. He rules the three planetary systems for 71 celestial ages, a length of sovereignty no mundane king could earn. Even by 100 horse sacrifices. Uchaishrava is his horse. Airavata is his mighty elephant. How his cow can be milked for any desire, and his garden is the resplendent Nandana. In that garden are desire trees like the Parijata, whose flowers yield whatever one may wish. Those trees, adorned with desire-yielding creepers, assume whatever forms one may like. Even a single flower from those trees can fully satisfy one's desires, whether for wonderful songs and music, splendid dances, bright clothing and ornaments, good food, or anything else. Nice flowers. And oh, how can I even describe Indra's greatest fortune? The personality of Godhead Vishnu has taken the form of Vamanadeva and become his younger brother. Lord Vamanadeva encourages Indra by shielding him from dangers, by accepting in person the elaborate worship Indra offers. But of course, you already know this and much more. So, yes.
It seems that
Well, you have that aspect because means if you're dealing in the demigods, as we know, the position is that they may be neophyte, right? But otherwise, why would they appear in that position as opposed to the family of devotees, right? So you have that aspect. So then that naturally means that there's an element of mixed devotional service. But you're bringing in the two aspects. One is the element of having facility because one's doing devotional service, so Krishna gives facility so it's easier to do your service. And you have the other aspect, what he mentioned, of Kleshagni and Shubhada, is that the removal of distress and the, you know, the, how you say, appearance of good qualities and happiness. Right? Yes? No? Yeah. It's also in the new they make that much noise. After they've been here a while, they stop making this. There's certain noises that are only made by kids that are fresh from home. Like that. Screeching is one of them. After they've been here a while, they stop screeching. Somehow or another, it's not important anymore. Does that make sense? So based on that, then you could say he's just showing the symptoms of the devotion. At the same time as pointing out the mercy of the Lord, we haven't necessarily brought out the element of pure devotion yet. Right? We've shown that there is great devotion and all these kind of things, but that hasn't been shown that that's the major element of, right? Because otherwise it's just like Krishna offers material facility and liberation when he's pleased with the devotee. But the real mercy is devotion, is that service to him. Right? That's Bali Maharaj is making that point about Prahlad Maharaj. So then you're also is getting material facility the symptom of mercy of the Lord. Right? I mean, have you ever bumped into it where devotees will be, it may come up in a conversation that they've been around for a long time and all that, and now what do they have to show for it, and they don't have necessarily facilities or position, or you ever heard that kind of discussion? Yes. So therefore, we're starting out there. You know, we're starting there. The alternative is to build our own hut. So does that make sense? So devotees may also think like this. Because otherwise, if Prabhupada is saying devotees will go to the heavenly planets, because Krishna is mentioning that in the Gita, then as we mentioned, so but they're devotees who are going there. So that must mean that they think that this is of some value, of some importance. Does that make sense? So then, you know, taking this group, at least these first three, then, you know, elevated Brahmins, great kings, demigods, right? Because then after this, then we'll have to see, it may start going the route of detachment, which is not necessarily the symptom that one looks at as the benefit of devotional service. Hare Krishna. Slightly conscious, slightly unconscious. Okay, does that make sense? So far, the various symptoms of mercy identified by our speakers have included opulence, renunciation, and devotional influence. In this group of verses, the southern king identifies opulence as a distinguishing characteristic between himself and Indra. Indra possesses power, sovereignty, and luxuries far in excess of what any mundane king could expect. In addition, however, the southern king adds a new symptom of the Lord's mercy: physical proximity. What makes Indra glorious is the nature of his personal relationship to the Lord. The demigods not only associate with the Lord face to face, but Vamanadeva went so far as to appear in Indra's family. Hence, what the king is suggesting is that the earthly realms are bereft of the Lord's direct personal association. The Prayag Brahmana constructed a makeshift altar out of mud for Shaligram Shila. The king built a large temple with beautiful deities. These two devotees can relate to the Lord in his deity form, but can only aspire to someday serve, walk, or talk with the Lord directly. Therefore, due to their proximity, the demigods receive far more mercy. Right? So this is bringing out another aspect. So even though he's describing all that, then the point is that proximity with the Lord is the... This theme resurfaces through Brihad Bhagavatamrita, beginning with the earthly devotees all the way up to Dwarka. The associates of the Lord enjoy greater and greater proximity. The exception, of course, is revealed in the concluding chapter, where we learn that proximity may not be the ultimate symptom of Krishna's mercy. Right? Because we will think that that is by being with the Lord. Because generally the concept of separation is not what we would call the Lord's mercy. But we know that it is, but it may not be. Yeah. Means you could, but at the same time, as we see that when the symptoms that Narad Muni sees is great, is their devotion and all that is great. When you would hear what Narad Muni is seeing, then you can see as they're nicely situated as devotees, right? But the whole point is that's not necessarily the topmost symptoms. But they are symptoms of devotional service. So it's not, we're talking about devotees here. So it's not that it's necessarily, you do have the aspect of the karma, mystery, and bhakti. But at the same time, is that's not the prominence of Narad Muni is observing. He's seeing is that you have these two individuals are nicely engaged in the Lord's service. You know, nicely focused, nicely engaged. Does that make sense? That's why it's a delicate thing to discuss, because it's not that there's any faults. You know, it's the point is we should see the glories of what they have. That, you know, just with something simple they're offering and doing, there's not a lot happening, and so they are, but they're getting. But Narad Muni sees it as symptomatic of the Lord's mercy. Thus ends the first chapter of part one of Srila Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita entitled Bauma on the Earth. Right, because after this we kind of head out from here. So by the grace of Narad Muni, then we're able to appreciate all these things. We can move to the universe. Because others might not be able to make the tour so easily. Chapter 2, and we see we're already in heaven in chapter 2, so if we've got 7 chapters, we're going to get quite elevated here. Divya in heaven. Overview. Narada sees Vamanadeva and Indra. Narada praises Indra. Indra refutes Narada's praise. Indra directs Narada to Lord Brahma. Narada sees the Mahapurusha on Brahmaloka. Narada praises Brahma. Lord Brahma refuses Narada's praise. Lord Brahma directs Narada to Lord Shiva. Right. So we're moving up quite quick. So we can understand there's going to be a lot of elements in as we go through. That's not a tattoo of a tear, is it? Oh. He's already put in his time. Okay. Narada sees Vamanadeva and Indra. Verses 1-8. At the behest of the southern king, Narad Muni leaves earth and ascends to Indra's palace in Swargaloka. There's also the element, now if they weren't devotees and it was completely mundane, why would Narad Muni take it as symptoms, and why would he be following it? So there must be something about validity to the statements, you know, so that they're basing it on. If you're taking that, you know, I have so much facility and everyone has facility because of performing devotional service, look at the facility that Indra has. Is that? After that, he will be directed to Lord Brahma's planet, Satyaloka. Satyaloka. For conditioned jivas, these places are as good as it gets. In chapter 1, we witness the fact that, in spite of the Lord's not being personally present before them, the devotees on earth exhibited a high degree of devotion. Right? But, you know, worshipping the deity of the Shaligram for the Brahman, because that's simple. doesn't take much. You can take them anywhere. Like he said, he puts them to rest and then they go. Prabhupada said, Shaligram Shila means, what is it? I think he said, worship sleeping. Take them out of the box, do the worship, put them back to sleep, put them back in the box. While the king, then there's deities and lots of temples like that. In this chapter, we will attempt to determine how favorable the upper planetary systems are to the cultivation of pure devotion. Herein, we will examine to what extent our Lord Indra and Lord Brahma's bhakti tinged with karma and jnana. This chapter also continues to assess whether or not the Lord's mercy can be measured on the basis of externals. Right? Because these doubts may be there. Because like here, it's pointed out, well, Indra has all this facility and he lives with the Lord and all that. So then you have to be able to see. Yes, they are symptoms, but at the same time, is they're not necessarily. You can... Yes. Okay. Sri Purukit said, after praising the great king, Narada made his way to heaven. There in the assembly hall, he saw Lord Vishnu in all his brilliance, surrounded by hosts of demigods. He was decorated with sandalwood pulp, divine ornaments and garments, and a garland made of varied flowers from desire trees. Sitting comfortably on the back of Garuda, he was worshipped with celestial offerings. Brihaspati and other exalted sages praised his glories. And Mother Aditi pampered him. He in turn delighted each of them with his affectionate comments. Siddhas, Vidyadharas, Gandharvas and Apsaras recited prayers. They cried, all glories to you, and sang, danced and played music for his pleasure. In words that all could hear, the Lord assured Indra that he need not be afraid of the daityas. Kirti Devi offered the Lord betel nut, which he gracefully accepted and chewed. Although he had come to the court of heaven to meet Indra, Narad first is blessed with darshan of Vamanadeva and his wife Kirti Devi. Hence, the first distinction drawn between heaven and earth is that the Lord permanently resides there and interacts with his devotees face to face. Just as the southern king had assured, the Lord's favor towards Indra was evident by his accepting worship and giving blessings. He pacified Indra by insisting that, although the daityas led by Mali Maharaj had conquered heaven many times, now that he was there they had full protection. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments that the demigods were following one of two standards described in old textbooks on deity worship like Vishnu Bhakti Chandra Daya, the common standard in which 16 items are offered to the Lord's pleasure, beginning with Padya and Argya waters, or alternatively, a more elaborate worship with 64 items. Right? Depending on the situation, that 16 is the standard, and then the 64 is additional applications of the 16 at different times of the day, or some more elaborate detail. But in any case, they're both basically the same thing. Verse 6, continuously chanting the Lord's glories, Indra described with great joy the ways the Lord had helped him in the past. Indra shone forth in his own opulence as he sat on his own throne next to the Lord, shedding from his thousand eyes a downpour of tears. You can get wet really quick. This verse is significant, for it speaks to the nature of the demigods. Indra is praising the Lord's glories and manifesting gratitude to the point of tears. Yet, which qualities is he praising? Indra is glorifying the Lord for all the times he has freed him from distress. Srila Prabhupada summarizes the disposition of the demigods thusly. The difference between Sakama and Akama bhakti devotees is that Sakama devotees, like the demigods, fall into difficulty. They approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead for relief, whereas Akama devotees, even in the greatest danger, never disturb the Lord for material benefits. Even if an Akama devotee is suffering, he thinks this is due to his past impious activities and agrees to suffer the consequences. He never disturbs the Lord. Sakama devotees immediately pray to the Lord as soon as they are in difficulty. But they are regarded as pious because they consider themselves fully dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Right? So that's an element that's important, is that dependency upon the Lord. Right? That surrender to the Lord. So in this way, then they're devotees. Right? So that aspect's important. So we shouldn't underestimate that point. Because otherwise, then, we tend to look at the weaknesses. No, the weaknesses is for in our own devotional service. So in other words, we gain from here for our own devotional service. But as far as the, let's say, appreciation of others, then these things should be appreciated. All these glories that Narad Muni has seen, right? Because these are being described by Sanatana Goswami. Right? So here they're living with the Lord, they're worshiping the Lord, the 16 items, but personally. But the point is the Lord is saving them from distress because that's what they're approaching Him for. So that's the relationship. But they're grateful, right? They're showing they're not just puffed up as that, yeah, of course, He's supposed to do this. So that kind of element is there. So then it comes out nice. Yeah.
Sometimes we may be in a situation where we are the authority and there is some weakness, so then we can work with that. Right?
Means our own weakness or others' weakness?
Someone else's.
But the point is you're trying to reduce the weakness, but that's not the main focus. The main focus is, it's easier than going to the pumps. Now that's something you can't do at home. Of course, if we were in a medieval town, we could, but... Yeah, because you'll notice that there is no path under the bridge, so you don't have to worry about it.
Trying to reduce.
Yes, but the main thing is what's there, because there's a spark, fanning that. In other words, the good qualities is what you're going to look at. Like it mentions that the cultured person notices the good qualities. What was the word?
Noble.
The noble person notices the good qualities. And that's what the relationship is based on. Then, but it's not that you don't know what the weakness is. You know, just like it says the king, he has ministers, but there's, I think it was four different capacities they could function in. Because there were four tests. Four tests? Maybe three tests. You know, test of money, test of the senses. I can't remember what the last one was. Maybe test of power. So depending upon which ones they could pass, that's where they were situated. It wasn't based on what they... means, of course, that you avoid the ones they couldn't. Right? Those who could control the senses, they'd be connected with the harem. Those who could deal with money, they would deal with those things. Those who could deal with power could do those. But the one who could deal with all of them, they're your prime minister. So it's understood as, I mean, it's not that, you know, he has a whole army of prime ministers. No, out of all his ministers, there's only going to be one that is good in all of them. So in other words, the relationship's based on what's good. And then what's bad is then, yes, you can give direction and all that. But it's more of just engaging in what they're good at and avoiding that which they're not good at. Because if you develop devotional service in one area and you become situated, you start developing all the good qualities. So naturally the problems that were there will go away. So the real way of making problems go away is by being situated in devotional service, not by separately trying to focus on the other. You should be aware of it, but it's not that it's a separate endeavor. That's it. I remember it was some years back. Maybe 6, 8, 10 years back, somewhere in there. I remember Govinda Maharaj, Shivaram Maharaj were making a very strong point. Devotional service is not about anartha nivritti. Because at that time, devotees were talking a lot because, you know, they were starting to become familiar with the terms and the thing. That it's all, you got to get rid of these. They were saying it's not about getting rid of these. It's about becoming stable in devotional service, developing a taste in that. Naturally, if you have a taste in something else, then that's going to distract from your being focused on the name. It's not about getting rid of that, it's about developing attachment to the name. In doing that, one, you're being aware to not be involved in things that are useless. But the endeavor is really about developing the taste for the name. Right? And then automatically the others. But it's not that you're unaware of them, or it's not like the sahajis where they don't care about rules. No, it's that you're being careful to not be engaged in anything that's going to be distracting. But at the same time, as you're making the effort to be engaged in those things that are positive. So that's the thing here, is there's the positive elements that are therefore useful and beneficial. Right? Then there is the weaknesses that are there. Now, those aren't the thing that you bring out, necessarily. You bring it out in comparison to something else. So that's why we'll see when we go up to the next level. But from the other level, then the previous level, then it's a glory. Right? Because you can say it was the only one, the one that's connected with devotional services being with the Lord. But at the same time, is why are they there? Why do they have all the other stuff? It's part of the whole thing. Because they are that pious, they can function, they can work for the Lord. Therefore, they're given that facility. It means, how would you be, you know, in charge of some aspect of the universe, but you have no facility? You know what I'm saying? You know, if you hear stories, the demigod comes down, gives him blessing, but he's ugly. Is anybody going to take him seriously? No. You know, it's just like a king. If the king is poor, do people take him seriously? No, he's got to be rich, he's got to be powerful, he's got to be everything. Whatever it is you want, he's got to have that, you know, 1,000 times more. Then you'll say, okay, he's the king. You know, if he's only double what you got, hey, I could work at it, I could get that. But if it's significantly more, then you kind of, okay, he's the king.
Thinking of Elvis.
Yeah, I was also there. I was thinking, yeah, his pompadour is bigger than anybody else's.
Got it all. You know,
so he's the king. Yeah. Okay, so that's the whole point.
So.
Yes. Yes. Right. But it's being pointed out is that they're grateful and they're interacting with the Lord and dependent and surrender to the Lord. But we do see the element that it is based on their just having the facilities to do their service. It hasn't been mentioned about this concept of pure devotion. So sometime we're going to get to that. Right? So we're adding in more and more elements. But, yeah. Yes. They might. It's not so much brought out because it's using these other symptoms. But from what we see is that they're greatly, stable and mature in their service. But how much is not being brought out here at this point? Because we'll see as we go along. Then, you know, it'll get to one point. Then it'll just be yes. This is what we're used to talking about, right? But up to here, then this is all. These are all the gray areas that. Even while suffering in the midst, Yeah. Even while suffering in the midst of difficulties, devotees simply offer their prayers and service more enthusiastically. In this way, they become firmly fixed in devotional service and eligible to return home back to Godhead without a doubt. Right? Because what we're saying is that when there's a problem, then people surrender. But we see is that those who are the you know, very advanced devotees, it doesn't matter what the situation, their degree of surrender is the same. So it's not dependent upon these, but because we respond to these things, therefore they're there. Is that?
Yes.
But it says they'll return to Godhead without a doubt, so that's not a problem. Sakama devotees, of course, achieve from the Lord the results they desire from their prayers, but they do not immediately become fit to return to Godhead. It is to be noted herein that Lord Vishnu, in his various incarnations, is always the protector of his devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.40. So what's the point? That he doesn't have anything? Or it's his surrender to the Lord? So you can say as a Sakam devotee, he has things or wants things. But it's his connection to the Lord that makes him a devotee. So he's going to the Lord for that. And the Akama devotee is one who's not looking for those things. Right? So his stableness is greater. So it's that connection to the Lord that's more important. That's why the Anishta Bhakti is Anishta because there's material desire. Right? As soon as that desire is controlled, then it becomes the Nishta Bhakti. Fixed.
Right? Can we say that the Sakam devotee may see the Lord as secondary and his desires as primary?
Can, but in the practice that Krishna's recommending in Gita, he wouldn't do that. Because, he's saying four kinds of pious people surrender.
Yes.
But the one who wants to know the Lord, now that's what you want to get to. Because the jnani will remain. But the other three, if they maintain that mentality, they won't remain. Because as soon as the distress goes, the facility comes, or they get their knowledge, they'll go away. Right? And look for something else. But if in that process, they started with that, but they come to the point of being jnani, right? Then there's no problem. Right? Then there won't be any problem. Is that what someone says? To be noted herein that Lord Vishnu in his various incarnations is always the protector of his devotees. Also of significance here is Indra's openness in declaring his utter dependency on the Lord before all the assembled demigods. Firstly, it shows that he is aware of the great mercy he has received from the Lord. Secondly, this show of humility stands in marked contrast to Indra's repeated displays of false pride, which land him and the entire heavenly kingdom in trouble. Here are a few examples of such offenses and the Lord's remedial interventions. Indra offends Durvasa Muni, causing Lakshmi to abandon the demigods. In the ensuing churning of the milk ocean pastime, the Lord appears in multiple forms, like Ajita, Kurma, Mohini Murti, and Mohini Murti in order to save the demigods, footnote 16. Srila Prabhupada summarizes this offense as follows. It is described that while Durvasa Muni was passing on the road, he saw Indra on the back of his elephant. Oh, okay. And was pleased to offer Indra a garland from his own neck. Indra, however, being too puffed up, took the garland and without respect for Durvasa Muni, he placed it on the trunk of his carrier elephant. The elephant, being an animal, could not understand the value of the garland, and thus the elephant threw the garland between its legs and smashed it. Seeing this insulting behavior, Durvasa Muni immediately cursed Indra to be poverty-stricken, bereft of all material opulence. Because of his opulence, that's why he was thinking that he's the king of heaven, and then just this regular old sadhu is giving this garland. Uh, Thus, the demigods, afflicted on one side by the fighting demons, on the other side by the curse of Durvasa Muni, lost all the material opulences in the three worlds. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons. Otherwise, he will fall down. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.5.15-16 purport. Okay, continuing. Indra offends his guru, Brihaspati, in the ensuing Dhritarasura pastime. Narayana appears to instruct Indra on how to attain a weapon to kill Dhritra. Footnote 17. Srila Prabhupada explains who is the true recipient of mercy in this pastime. Bhagavad Gita 4.11. The Lord says, as devotees surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. Both Indra and Dhritarasura were certainly devotees of the Lord. Although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Dhritarasura, the Lord was actually more favorable to Dhritarasura because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Dhritarasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Right? Because Indra wants to get back to his position here, and what's his name? And Dhritarasura was interested in pure devotion, so he'd go back to Godhead. Dhritarasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. What we see in his last life, he was a king, though he was a liberated soul. He had, you know, very vast opulence. Right? He had, a flower airplane he'd fly around in with the Vididhara ladies. Right? So they're from the higher planets. You know, so he didn't have any problem in opulence, right? He had 10 million wives. Now that takes some opulence because each one needs their own palace. That's a lot of money, right? So he had facility, but he wasn't worried about that, right?
And that's why he can't have it.
Yes, and so, but he's cursed to be a demon. So then he just continues in that same devotional line, right? You know, it doesn't go in. He was. That was the whole pastime, because he had that pastime about the son, because the thing is, the king is supposed to leave an heir to carry on the kingdom. Otherwise, you've set it all up that the citizens are protected. Now, if there's not an heir, then they'll get distracted, or other kings will get greedy, or, you know, so many problems are there. But if the kingdom's powerful and there's someone in the throne, then generally everybody just goes on in there as, you know, status quo. But otherwise, then if not, they'll have a tendency to get disturbed to think about something else. Right? So he's, you know, worried about that because that's his, you know, his duties, his occupation, though it's not the highest. But then from that he hears all kinds of nice instructions from the son, right? The dead son. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard. And when he gets them, he creates many enemies because this material world is always full of rivalry. If one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious. And if you don't have anything, then they think you're a loser. You know, so you get, then they get envious. It's just, you can't win. For Ekanta Bhaktas, unalloyed devotees, Krishna therefore never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of the karmic. Right? In other words, they don't have material. They don't have.
Yes.
They have for the facility for the service, because that's, they would engage in the Lord's service anyway. So what opulence they have is opulence for the service. It's not specifically theirs. Right? Because just like Yudhishthira, he has the kingdom, but if he doesn't, him and his brothers and wife sit out in the forest with the sages and discuss, you know, philosophy. So it's just, if he's there, he'll perform that service as the emperor. And if he's not, they'll continue doing their devotional service out in the forest. with that. A karmi's possessions are achieved as a result of karma, but those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotional activities. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared to those of a karmi. Right? Because a devotee may have some things, but it's not that, oh, you know, so much opulence, so much this, so much that. It's not a position. It's about service. Right? So with the devotees, you don't have these. You know, by conditioning, we may get distracted, but it's not. But by devotional service, they're not. It's not. There's no connection. Right? It's not about karma. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami compares the devotion of the Daitya, Bali Maharaj, with the Aditya, Indra.
This is 18.
Oh, that's footnote 18. I just kept reading. Okay. Yes, this is the whole page is footnote. Okay. Oh, sorry. I should have read this sentence first. Indra loses the heavenly kingdom. So the third one. Indra loses the heavenly kingdom to Bali Maharaj. The Lord appears as Vamanadeva, deceives Bali into relinquishing the three worlds, then reinstates Indra on his throne. Footnote 18. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami compares the devotion of the Daitya Bali Maharaj with the Aditya Indra. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead could see no other means of taking everything away from Bali Maharaj, he adopted the trick of begging from him and took away all the three worlds. Right? Because how did he get heaven? You know, in this is because he's saying there's no other method. How did he get? Why did he get and Indra lost?
Because Indra offended his guru.
Yes, because Indra offended his guru, while Bali Maharaj was following strictly the order of his guru. Right? So naturally that's going to work. It doesn't matter, you know, what anybody thinks about the process. It works. Like that. It even works for the demons if they fall. It works. It's just that's a method. It works. Right? Does that make sense? You go to school. You listen to the teachers, do the homework, you know, apply yourself in the way they say, you get good grades. You know, things are successful. You don't, it doesn't work. Right? So it just, because it's God's principle. It always works. So it's not a principle to be adjusted because somebody has problem with, you know, how you say, pranamoyic, how you say, tendencies of, you know, problems with authority, right? That's not a reason to adjust an eternal principle. That is a devotional principle, but because it's so important, it even works in the material, on the material platform. Right? He adopted the trick of begging from him and took away all the three worlds. Thus only his body was left, but the Lord was still not satisfied. He arrested Bali Maharaj, bound him with the ropes of Varuna, and threw him in a cave in a mountain. Nevertheless, although all his property was taken, and he was thrown into a cave, Bali Maharaj was such a great devotee that he spoke as follows. Well, these are the verses that we just did. Alas, how pitiable it is for Indra, the king of heaven, that although he is very learned and powerful, and although he chose Brihaspati as his prime minister to instruct him, he is completely ignorant concerning spiritual advancement. Brihaspati is also unintelligent because he did not properly instruct his disciple, Indra. Lord Vamadeva was standing at Indra's door, but King Indra, instead of begging him for an opportunity to render transcendental loving service, engaged him in asking me for alms to gain the three worlds for his sense gratification. Sovereignty over the three worlds is very insignificant because whatever material opulence one may possess lasts only for an age of Manu, which is but a tiny fraction of endless time. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:24, 23, and 24. In contrast with Indra's attachment, we learn how pure devotees like Maharaj Chitraketu are detached in all circumstances. After cursing him to take birth as a demon, Parvati Devi is astounded by Chittaketu's lack of fear. Lord Shiva explains to his wife, Narayana para sarve nakutaschana vidyati svarga pavarga narakeshvapi tularta darshina. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada comments, Anukul yena krishnanu shilanam. They are liberally engaged in the service of the Lord, and therefore they are excellent. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-28 purport. Yes, so he's showing that that's difference, is that he's only asking the Lord, but he's going to the Lord. So they're devotees because they're going to the Lord for the material desires. So they're getting the mercy, right? Does that make sense? So here we're talking about their highest recipients, so then that must also be connected with the devotional process. Okay. Quite comfortable. Yes, yes. Okay. Does that make sense? So Bali Maharaj is making this distinction. That because of this he didn't catch that he could ask for transcendental devotional service. So he's rendering devotional service. Right, he's always in the Lord's association. But his point of doing that is to maintain his position in heaven. Right, so that's the difficulty. Okay. Indra kills the Brahmana, Vritrasura, causing him to be pursued relentlessly by sinful reaction personified. He is eventually reinstated into his position by worshipping Lord Vishnu. Right, because that frees one from all sins, so then he's able to perform. Indra and all the three worlds are tormented by Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. The Lord appears as Varaha in the Shinga to slay the demons. Footnote 19. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of their being killed, their mother, Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore Indra is cruel, hard-hearted, and sinful. When will I, having killed him, rest with a pacified mind? When dead, the bodies of all the rulers known as kings and great leaders will be transformed into worms, stool, or ashes. One enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know the true interest of life? Certainly he does not, for if one is envious of other entities, he surely goes to hell. Diti thought, Indra considers his body eternal, and thus he has become unrestrained. I therefore wish to have a son who can remove Indra's madness. Let me adopt some means to help me in this. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:18-23-26. Okay. I'm not sure who she gets as a son. The Maruts. The top of the same page. Oh, a deep... we're back to the top of the page. Diti adopts a year-long vow in order to beget a son to kill Indra. However, by virtue of her worship of Lord Vishnu, her children, the 49 Maruts, come to befriend Indra instead. Footnote 20. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport. When Diti, Indra's aunt, explained to Indra without reservations what she had wanted to do, Indra explained his intentions to her. Thus both of them, instead of being enemies, freely spoke the truth. This is the qualification that results from contact with Vishnu, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12. One develops a devotional attitude and becomes purified by worshipping the Supreme Lord. All the good qualities are certainly manifested in his body. Because of being touched by worship of Vishnu, both Diti and Indra were purified. Does he speak of the Russian? Yeah, tell him class is going on, so he can sit there, but he should not sing. Okay, verse 8. Lord Vishnu then proceeded to his own residence. Indra followed him for some distance and then returned to the assembly hall, where Narada greeted him and began to speak. Right, so that great friendship is there, that great mood is there, because when the Lord left, then Indra is going with him for some distance and then only coming back. Right, it's not just, you know, seeing him off the door, just sitting in his throne and see you later, whatever, he's not doing that kind of stuff. It would have been inappropriate for Narada to disclose his mind to Indra while Indra is worshipping Lord Vishnu. Now that the Lord had left, Narada greeted Indra saying, "Glories to you, please accept my blessings." Right, because Indra is busy, he's interacting with the Lord. So if we're talking about who has the greatest mercy of the Lord, why would you bother someone while they're getting mercy? Right, you know, they're trying to find that, you know. That's
etiquette.
Yes, it's etiquette. Narada praises Indra, 9-12, yes.
Isn't it that if we have a temple, if you have a pujari, he's doing puja, someone comes, pujari is supposed to actually stop the worship to welcome the guest?
That's there, but then you also have, in this case, the element that a Narad Muni is part of that scene. So when they have the court and they're worshipping Vishnu and all that, then that goes on nicely.
It's more of a friend than a guest.
Like that at this time when it's going like this. But if it was the regular court and then you would, like that, then it might be more of a Narad Muni's visiting. You do have that aspect, yes. Yes, you do. But he was just observing. So Narad Muni was observing and he's staying out of the way because he's just trying to understand what's happening. Right? Sri Narada said, "You have surely received the Lord's mercy, because demigods like Surya, Chandra, and Yama, what to speak of other rules of planets, all obey your orders." In other words, where would he have authority if it doesn't come from the Lord? "Sages like me are your subjects, and the Vedas praise you as the Lord of the universe, for you bestow the fruits of religion and irreligion." Sorry. 5:10. Okay, so then we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jaya
Natai Gaura Premanandini.